So this morning's movie was Moneyball. I'm not going to ask how many of you saw it. I don't want to get too excited or disappointed. So, and then I paired it this morning with the scripture from Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 through 8, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with, but I'm going to read it again anyways to ring a bell. There's a season for everything and a time for every matter under the heavens. A time for giving birth and a time for dying. A time for planting and a time for uprooting what was planted. A time for killing and a time for healing. A time for tearing down and a time for building up. A time for crying and a time for laughing. A time for mourning and a time for dancing. A time for throwing stones and a time for gathering stones. A time for embracing and a time for avoiding embraces. A time for searching and a time for losing. A time for keeping and a time for throwing away. A time for tearing and a time for repairing. A time for keeping silent and a time for speaking. A time for loving and a time for hating. A time for war and a time for peace. How can you not get romantic about baseball? Billy Beane. I fell in love with baseball after I moved to Denver. It just wasn't my thing before I got here. But when I got here, I fell head over heels for baseball, and I can tell you the exact four reasons why. It's fairly affordable to go to Coors Field. One of the Rockies' colors is purple. Their mascot's a dinosaur. And they brew Blue Moon at Coors Field. So the four steps to me falling in love with baseball. And I've quickly become a romantic about baseball, which may or may not have influenced this morning's movie selection. Moneyball came out 5 years ago, and it's about the 2002 Oakland Athletics. And I didn't follow baseball in 2002, so I kind of want to set the scene for you a little bit. The previous season for the Oakland Athletics had ended with them losing to the New York Yankees in the playoffs. It was a five-game series. The Oakland Athletics won the first two, and then they lost the next three games in a row to lose the playoffs. And that's where the movie starts. A team completely with a stripped-down budget who had fought their way to the playoffs to lose to a team with almost unlimited financial resources and therefore some of the best individual talent in the league. Leadership was upset. Oakland was upset. And the players that were gifted enough to help them get to that playoff berth were now being poached for higher salaries on the teams that could afford to pay them more. So enter Billy Beane, the person that I first quoted. He's the primary character of the movie, and he's the general manager of the Oakland Athletics. He was a previous baseball player who decided to pass up on college to play major league ball and then didn't make it. And so his career still ended up being in baseball, just as a general manager instead. And he's quoted in the movie saying, "I hate losing even more than I want to win." Now, if sports aren't your thing and your eyes are glazing over, I've got two silver linings for you. One, I've seen Brad's lineup over the last few years, and this might be your first movie sermon about sports that you've had to listen to. So buck up a little bit. And two, the movie really isn't about baseball. It's about statistics and mathematical analysis of baseball players, which is probably far more interesting than baseball. I'd like to tell you I'm kidding, but it's not. That's what the movie's about. The movie was just significantly more creative than I'm going to be able to do at finding a way to talk about mathematics and statistics in a funny and entertaining sort of way. Billy Beane recognizes his reality as the general manager of the Oakland Athletics. He has a limited budget. He has no all-star players. He has a goal of being a World Series championship team. And the current process, if he continues it, is going to have the same results season after season after season. and he's not getting the results that he wants or that he is paid to produce. Bean is posed with a choice. And while it may seem obvious to us sitting so far away, it's not a choice that we're usually apt to make. Does he meet with his scouts the same way he always does in the off season? Does he listen to their recommendations? Do they put together a team to replace the people that left as free agents and fill his roster using the same habits and the same expectations and the same patterns that baseball has always done? Or does he try new things? Dramatically new things, uncomfortable things. Does he do things that contradict what they've done previously? Does he do what is perhaps even controversial? Does he do new things that contradict all of the wisdom that has gotten the sport of baseball to 2002? Many scholars and theologians have questioned why the book of Ecclesiastes is even in the Bible. It's challenging and uncomfortable. It focuses upon the limits and the contradictions that we experience in life, and it explores the absolute absurdity of simplistic theology. In fact, the wisdom found in Ecclesiastes contradicts almost all of the prophetic literature in the Bible. It contradicts Isaiah, it contradicts Micah, it contradicts Jeremiah. Much of the prophetic literature follows a pattern. Israel, Judah, Assyria, you are experiencing what you are experiencing because you've been wicked, because you have not cared for the oppressed, because you are living sinful lives, and sinful, wicked lives lead to judgment by God. Judgment and punishment. In fact, it is how we explain the fall of Jerusalem. It's how we explain the fall of the temple. It's how we explain the people being sent into exile. And if only these people would be pious and righteous and good, then they would experience good things. They would experience the glory of God. They would experience atonement with God. They would experience the fruitfulness of a land of milk and honey. Bad behavior equals punishment. Good behavior equals glory. Within Ecclesiastes, though, we learn that goodness does not equal success. Righteousness does not lead to a life of good and wonder and ease. And wickedness does not equal failure. Circumstance, perspective, and life's complexities all turn events upside down on their head. The scenarios and the habits of our life are unable to follow a pattern of A plus B equals C. And Ecclesiastes, in all of its wisdom, has been questioned for this because of its lack of coherence, because of its contradictions, and because it radically questions tradition. If we have all this wisdom in the prophets, how can we also have this wisdom literature that tells us it's not that simple? And this morning's scripture, even that small bit of 8 verses, interestingly, is about the same thing, even if you don't at first realize it. The opposing items on this list may seem like right or wrong, good or bad. We want laughter, not tears. We want dancing, not mourning. And if you're unsure what I mean, let's literally look at the very first line. There's a season for everything. Without the death of autumn and winter, we do not get the birth and the growth of spring and summer. It's impossible. Where we are in life offers us perspective and opportunities for acceptance that there is health in crying and there's health in laughing, that there are opportunities for grief and mourning, and there are completely different opportunities that are appropriate and healthy for dancing. Scripture teaches us that there's times for tearing down, there's time for war, and there's times for repairing and building up, and times for peace. We could walk through each of the different pairings, all 8 verses, and explore the times in which the less obvious one of the pair actually has a healthy, appropriate place in life, depending on our circumstance and our perspective and how life has fallen out at that point. Life is a journey of contradictions. There are times in which doing something that looks like it could destroy all the work we've done actually is the path to achieving our end goal. It's the science behind pruning. Now, I'm not a gardener, but I understand the science of pruning. You literally cut off parts of the plant. You deflower it, and sometimes you prune back so far, it actually looks ugly. But in the cutting back, in the pruning, in the making something ugly, you actually create the opportunity for growth. And sometimes something bigger and more grand than you ever imagined before. Literal destruction of that plant is what leads to the fullness and the richness of new life. When I moved to Denver, my love for baseball was not the only thing that changed about my life before Denver and after Denver. Everything changed. I had been living in Chicago for almost a decade. Another point where people say, how did you not love baseball before Denver? Four reasons. I had family there. I'd lived in the Midwest my whole life. I had friends I'd gone to college with and high school with that had become family. I was successful in my career, both altruistically and financially. I was able to live a comfortable life in which I got to have the social life and the entertainment life that I wanted. It was comfortable. It was everything I thought life was supposed to be. And some could describe what I did next as quitting or destroying a perfectly good life. I left my home. I left my family and friends. I left my job and my career. I stopped contributing to my health savings account. I stopped contributing to my 401k. I left my community and I left my culture. I moved across the country with one friend. I started grad school without a job. And then I depleted my health savings account and I depleted my 401k so that I could pay my rent and I could buy food and I could invest in tons and tons of books for a career that I knew nothing about. Not only did I know nothing about it, but it required a graduate degree. And even after the degree, it was a career that required people to interview me and vet me and to even vote on my ability to be a part of that career and that community with them. And when I was asked to explain myself in this journey from Chicago to Denver, often to people that are not Methodist or even Christian, what are you doing? My answer was, God has called me to do it. And no, it was not an audible call. It's just a feeling. Sometimes change isn't gradual or incremental based on experiences of life. And this week's movie shows us just that. Billy Bean hires a brand new assistant general manager to analyze players strictly on statistics, especially their ability to get on base. They don't look at the statistics that we see on the back of baseball cards or what we see flashed up on the screen. They weren't analyzing their batting average. They weren't analyzing their RBIs. They weren't even analyzing their ability to pitch or defensively field the balls. It strictly came down to how many times could they either take a walk or get a base hit to get onto first base? And could they set up a whole team in which everybody could focus on getting on first and slowly make their way around the diamond to score and win games. The scouts and the manager, the coach, depending on what language you use, for the Oakland Athletics were dismissive at first. It's not going to work. Don't worry about Billy. He's off his rocker. It's no big deal. And then when they realize that their roles and their jobs and the way they've understood baseball their whole life is being jeopardized and questioned and done completely different, they become straight up hostile. Bean is accused of trying to destroy the Oakland Athletics. What you're doing is going to kill the team. What Bean was doing was upsetting everyone because he was radically questioning the tradition of baseball. And the writer of Ecclesiastes radically questions the traditions of our Bible. And this is usually where faith communities experience their biggest struggles. This is where I have been challenged in answering my call and trying to do ministry. I want to be a minister, but I want to do it in a nonprofit, not in a local church. Well, when are you getting back to the local church, Elizabeth? I'm not. I think you're doing it wrong, Elizabeth. I'm not. People are emotionally invested in the way things have been done in the past. And if you are here as a second or third generation at Highlands United Methodist Church, you're even more emotionally invested than the people that have joined in their lifetime. Many of us in the church have been taught the same minor version of prosperity theology, too. If you just keep plugging along, good begets good, and good equals success. We have a choice that invites us into something different, though. We can commit to the path tradition has historically set for us, or we can commit to the mission that tradition has set for us as a goal, that we can also work towards recognizing how traditionally and how we do it now may be different, and how we understand and engage failure in that journey towards something might look different too. So where is God calling you? Where is God calling Highlands United Methodist Church? Where is God calling the community of Highlands in the greater Denver area to be different, to make disciples for the transformation of the world? Are you called to do ministry the way you always have? Are we called to do church the way we learned in the 1960s? Are we called to do ministry the way we were raised to do ministry, because this is how church looked when I was a kid? This is how church should look today? Or is God calling you in this community to do something radically different for the purpose of transforming the world? Ecclesiastes and Moneyball teach us to go for the bold move of working towards our historically common goal, our mission, our vision of who we can be. Ecclesiastes in the movie teach us that failing is important, that numbers and tangible results do not determine our success, but how we learn from our failures and adjust and try again and experiment and be bold is where we find success. Ecclesiastes and Moneyball teach us that my move from Chicago in answering my call was not destroying my life, but it was listening and recognizing that a season and my circumstances were different and that there was opportunity on the horizon. And all of it teaches us that most likely we will experience dismissiveness and even hostility. People will actively try and stop you from doing something new if it contradicts how we've done it in the past. Radical change does not seek to dishonor the past or dishonor the work that's done before us, but to honor the goal and the mission that's been set before us in trying to still achieve it. Billy Beane has a very specific way in which he wants his choices and his changes to the Oakland Athletics to play out. He says, if we don't win the last game of the series, they'll dismiss us. I know these guys. I know the way they think, and they will erase us. And everything we've done here, none of it will matter. Any other team wins the World Series, good for them. They're drinking champagne, they're getting a ring. But if we win on our budget with this team, we'll have changed the game. And that's what I want. I want it to mean something. While I'm not willing to say that the 2002 Oakland Athletics were an act of God, I will say that God acts in mysterious ways. They went on to win a record-setting 20 games in a row by putting an injured catcher as a first baseman, by putting a pitcher that gets closer to the ground than he does standing on the mound, by putting a Yankee that the Yankees were willing to pay to get off their roster in the outfield. They did not survive the playoffs that year. The Anaheim Angels won the World Series in 2002. And although the Oakland Athletics have yet to win a World Series championship with the model of baseball they've put in place, and changing how they recruit and how they analyze players and how they manage a baseball team, they changed the game of baseball forever. The next season, multiple baseball teams went out and hired economists and statisticians to be on their leadership teams. And the 2004 Boston Red Sox won their first pennant race since 1918. Both the 1918 and the 2004 Boston Red Sox had the same goal in mind, win the World Series. But they both had to be willing to recognize their circumstances and know they'd have to get there two different ways. How is God calling you into something new, into making disciples for the transformation of the world?